Yeah, I'm Mia Yang. I'm a geriatrician, so a physician for older adults. I identify as she, her, hers, and I am a Chinese American immigrant. Yeah, the story actually probably started in my grandfather's generation. My paternal grandfather's younger brother came to the United States in the 70s and at that time brought his young family over while they were trying to get established. And unfortunately, he died of a sudden heart attack, which then my grandfather thought must have been from the stress of bringing your whole family over while you're trying to get established in a new country. So when my dad came to North Carolina for graduate school, they insisted that I stay behind with my grandparents until my parents could get settled. So my dad came to the United States when I was three, which was 1988. And then my mom came the year after. And then my brother was born when I was eight. And at that time, they thought that they could do sort of an exchange of the kids and bring me over here and take my brother back to China because it was difficult for them to afford childcare here. But unfortunately, the immigration rules had changed at that time, where it used to be you could come to the United States on a visitation visa and then apply for a green card while you're in the U.S. But they had changed the rules so that you had to get the green card in hand before coming over to the United States. And the green card process for me, unfortunately, took an additional four more years. So I was, I didn't see my father for about 10 years. And I saw my mom once during the 9 years that we were apart, when my mom brought my younger brother, who was born in North Carolina, actually back to China to be with my grandparents and I. So that's the long story of why we ended up spending such a long time apart. China time was like Saturday evening, or maybe it was Sunday evening, but one of those days, and it was pretty routine that my parents would call around that time. So if we went to any parties at, one of my grandparents' friends' houses, we always had to come home by 8 o'clock p.m. To be able to catch my parents' call. When they left, I was young enough that I didn't quite remember them very well. So my elementary school memories were really of my aunt, my dad's younger sister, kind of acting in that parental role, showing up to school for, parent-teacher conferences and things like that. I think I had a wonderful childhood growing up with my grandparents. Definitely felt very loved and supported. And, my parents were always sort of somewhat, they didn't seem very real to me when I was growing up because, they were the folks I heard on the phone once a week. So I don't think I necessarily missed them as much as, if I had more memories of them if they had left China later. But certainly it was a big adjustment coming over to the United States when I was 12. And really kind of getting to know my parents then. It was a very disjointed family dynamic where, I left all the people that I really knew and grew up with to be with my parents who I really haven't been with. And then, the teenage years hit and I was a pretty moody teenager for all of the reasons that typical teenagers go through, plus this big adjustment at age 12. My dad came for graduate school in computer science at NCNT University in Greensboro. And then they moved sort of maybe to South Carolina for a couple of years, but they really liked North Carolina. So by the time I came when I was 12, they had already settled in Charlotte. So yeah, Charlotte's really where I spent, you know, the last year of the 2 years of middle school and high school. And that's where my parents still live today. We were living in one of the poorest provinces in China, but we were in the capital of the province. But it was in the 80s. So, you know, elementary schools at that time were not routinely teaching English. I think I was mostly worried about the fact that I didn't speak any English when I came over, but I didn't really have any concept or expectations of what the United States would be like. I do remember pretty distinctly when I did arrive, and my dad ended up picking me up in Newark in New Jersey, because that's where the flight landed. And then we took the long drive back to Charlotte. And one of the first things I remember was the paved asphalt, which was very different than the roads in China. So it was just like, wow, the roads here are black. Like, that's how strange. That was one of the first things I noticed. And definitely being in a less crowded environment where, you know, despite living in a pretty poor province, we were really in a major urban area. So, you know, people didn't live as far apart as in North Carolina. I think I remember telling some of my elementary school friends that, like, you know, it will be hard to get a picture of the whole family together because somebody has to take the photo. And they were like, well, just go next door and find someone to take the picture for you. And say, oh yeah, those next door neighbors are kind of far apart. It's just a different concept of space. I think in high school, I started to feel a bit more normal compared to middle school, in the sense that I had a core group of friends where we did the IB program together, the International Baccalaureate program, and we were sort of a smaller group of students within the larger school, which was not all IB students. So I think that environment was more conducive in terms of meeting people, because we already felt like we were sort of a subgroup within a larger group. And high school was really more of the years when I felt like I had a core group of friends. And then those friends ended up, a lot of them went to UNC Chapel Hill for undergrad, which is also where I went. So high school and college definitely felt much more of a natural social life, compared to, especially in the school environment, compared to middle school. I think in college, I thought of some sort of health professional, thought about dentistry, pharmacy school, but I ended up studying abroad in Mexico, because in high school, that's when I started learning Spanish. And then I went to Guadalajara, Mexico, over the summer between my first and second year. After my second year, sophomore year in college. And that's when I really decided on doing medicine, because I was allowed to do a lot more as sort of a student in Guadalajara, in the little hospital where I volunteered, compared to, you know, what a student would have been allowed to do here. So I felt like I was approaching, or I was getting a truer taste of what a career in medicine would be like. So it wasn't until after that experience that I decided on medicine. It ended up working out at the right time that I decided what I wanted to do, and then applied to medical school. I stayed at UNC for medical school, and then by the end of medical school, I was really tired of being in Chapel Hill and said that I needed to leave the state of North Carolina, otherwise I would be a lifer. But, you know, I met my husband during medical school, where he was an internal medicine resident at Carolina's Medical Center, which is now Atrium. So we always knew that we wanted to come back to North Carolina after training. But it was, I ended up spending 5 years in Maryland and Baltimore for my residency and geriatrics fellowship. So that was a really nice time away to just go to a different part of the country. I think at the time, my decision to go into geriatrics was not as clear in my head as now when I think back into my early life influences. You know, growing up with my grandparents definitely influenced my decision to go into geriatrics. But at the time in residency, I thankfully went to a internal medicine residency that had a very strong influence in geriatrics. Two of our program directors at the time were geriatricians. And I think I just really gravitated toward doing house calls. So seeing homebound patients in Baltimore at their own homes, which I felt was the best way to take care of those patients. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I decided on geriatrics fellowship. So I guess actually the majority of my time is not clinical. So I'm seeing patients about 30% of the time. The rest of my time is involved in dementia related research and administrative duties. So I lead our Wake Forest House Call program, where, you know, I now tell other people how to go into the home and help take care of folks. I think I really felt in love with dementia care when I was a geriatric fellow, where we would see patients in the Hopkins Memory Clinic come in for evaluation, as well as their family caregivers. And I think I just really gravitated toward that complex family-oriented care. And then when I got the job at Wake, what I thought I was going to do was really primarily be a clinician and expand the house call program to reach more patients at home. But then because Wake has such a variety of clinical trials to get involved in, once I became involved in clinical research, it was a lot more fun than I thought, than I had previously been exposed to. And so that's kind of over the years, I've transitioned much more into doing research compared to what I thought I was going to do when I first took the job. This is actually covered, I think, on different news media. It's called PMG, or Physician Mom Group. It was started by some physician moms who wanted to connect with other physician moms on Facebook, but now there's something ridiculous, like 60,000 women physicians who are connected through that large Facebook group and all the subgroups within it. Not all women are moms or even want to be moms, but it is still called PMG because that's originally what it was started out from. So Dr. Lulu, our editor and lead author, she had already published a couple of books as a pediatrician, but she really got the idea of showcasing the voices of other immigrant women. And I can't even remember which Facebook group she posted in, asking for women who were interested in sharing their immigrant experience. And I messaged her and said, sign me up. And at the same time, a lot of other women also kind of answered her call. A lot of us in the book are physicians, but not all of us. There are definitely kind of a very large age spectrum of women, and not all of us are mothers either, but most of us are. I do speak some phrases in Mandarin at home, but because my husband doesn't speak Mandarin, it is a little bit more difficult. And then sometimes in conversations with my parents, you know, I would encourage my daughter to speak some Mandarin. But at the same time, you know, I feel like it's not so important of an issue that I want to necessarily force my children to learn. I think it's just, I've seen how difficult it is even for my brother to learn Mandarin, even though Mandarin was actually his first language because he lived the first 4 years of his life in China. But then it's just been years of really struggling against like going to Chinese school in an environment where my parents spoke Mandarin at home. I think I'm much more interested in my children developing to become the people that they are, rather than necessarily forcing them or wanting them to turn out in a very specific way.